Yes, on the end. Come on up.
Yeah. Hi, Ajay.
Hi.
About 5 years or more, relevant to the last person. I came here with a big complaining voice about physical pain.
Mm-hmm.
And you challenged me in this little statement, just, you know, see what happens if you don't resist it. Well, I'm pretty ways down that line. It cracked me open pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And, after my relationship with pain made this huge shift, mm-hmm. I said, this is physical pain. Why, you know, how is emotional pain any different than that?
Mm, yeah.
Okay. So
why stop there?
That was a real challenge and an inquiry that led me further about emotional pain.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the physical pain and emotional pain are in some ways totally mishmashed, you know?
Yeah, often.
But what I was left with were these, this almost like a field of energy, these emotional mood states,
mm-hmm.
That I apparently had been experiencing since a young boy. I remember this, and they would still come and it'd tell me something was wrong.
Yeah.
Something is not okay here. And it led to further exploration. And as I experienced what I'd been running from all of my life, it happened every night at sunset.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was this mood state that would come upon me and be scary and anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And by just being there and allowing myself without a story to experience that, it became milder and milder. And now, I mean, I can experience it. It might happen as just like a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all. I have no real question.
Lovely. Lovely. Yeah. I'm really glad you shared this. I love getting the follow-up.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's the proof of the pudding.
Well, not only that. I mean, just recently, now that my relationship with pain has shifted, my back went bad, my real bad, at three different levels of my spine.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm in a much, much more to have to not resist. And I feel like I'm prepared.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Because I'm not getting younger. I don't think the generation gets better over time. It goes the other way.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, unless I'm wrong, I don't think anybody in this room is getting younger.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'll take solace in that.
Yeah, we're all.
Thank you, Ajay.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's you know, it's one of those teachings, or which is really just a pointing out that about resistance, it's so simple. Of course, what I've seen over the years is the simple stuff that's the most powerful. It's the obvious stuff that has the most power. Hey, I'm just resisting everything. You could come up with a million subtle ways to deal with that, but at the end of the day, resistance is, you don't have to explain to somebody resistance. Everybody knows what resistance is like. And it seems so simple. It seems so obvious. We often want something more complex and more sort of spiritually fascinating or interesting or profound. And yet very often it's the most obvious things taken a very long way, taken all the way through, that are the most powerful. Take one thing all the way. Or as my teacher used to say, so how are you going to find water? Digging 100 wells 1 foot deep, or one well 100 feet deep? Figure it out. It's the same amount of work. It almost doesn't matter what the one thing is. You just take it and go with it. And did I see a hand over there? Come on up, my friend.
Hi, Adya.
Hi.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, well, nice to have you aboard. Nice to talk to you. What's your name?
Cameron.
Hi, Cameron.
So my experience with fierce grace is more of a, it's kind of a chronic one. And what it started out with when I was about 20, I really wanted to be enlightened, like, terribly badly.
I remember.
And I came upon a teacher who claimed to be enlightened, and so I embarked on this journey with him. And as one of the previous questioners mentioned, he was really awakened in the mind, but not in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a result of that, I was incredibly wounded, and so were a lot of other people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience with Fierce Grace is this kind of chronic shame and guilt and anger that I haven't been able to fully let go of for, you know, 10 years after leaving this teacher.
Mm. Did you have a sense at any point in time that there was something a little off?
Oh, absolutely.
Pretty early on?
I was really dependent. I became really dependent on him, and I was just terrified to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I haven't been able to let go of it. I mean, there's some ways it's been an incredible gift. Like, I have tremendous capacities and gifts as a result of all the years that I spent with him. But then in some ways, I just feel really broken and just really numbed out in the body and heart area.
Well, let me tell you my experiences I have with that. I think it is what helps it absolutely vital to really move on. I mean, really just move on from something. Is, and this may sound a little sort of modern psychological, I don't know, but it's true. When you can take 100% responsibility for your own experience, you'll be free. The trick is, don't take responsibility in the form of judgment. Just, it's like, that's why I asked you the question. Did you sense that there was something a little off? And the first thing you said is, oh yeah. And I could have asked the follow-up question, and did you act on it immediately? But we already know the answer to that. Oh, no, I didn't act on it. And the thing is starting to see, because what happens, we go through experiences like that, right? And it also breeds a sort of distrust in general, but it can also breed a distrust within yourself. Right? You distrust yourself. How did I get myself in? Why did I do that? And then having had somebody that you felt didn't use their authority wisely or power wisely, then you think, my God, I distrust that outside sort of power. But what I'm trying to, when you can really see that, you know, I actually had what I needed. I had a sense there was something off here pretty early on. I had a sense. Apparently, for whatever reason, I wasn't ready to act on it. You know, I was listening to another authority too much, or I wasn't paying attention to myself, or I didn't feel like it was okay, I didn't feel like I had permission, or whatever it was. But the sense that you knew, you had a sense there's something was pretty off here, relatively early on, that you knew that. That's a really good piece of information. You can beat yourself up with that, of course, right?
I beat the hell out of myself with that.
Right, which is what keeps you from being able to fully move on in the way you'd like to. When you can, but see, because you can, we can see it from two different vantage points. One is from sort of a judgmental, egoic mind. Like, God, I saw it. I didn't do anything. Why didn't I do anything? What was, you know, on and on and on it goes. And then you become very judgmental to yourself. Right? That makes you stuck in time. Right? Anybody can do it. Look at the things that you judge most in your life. You're stuck in time right at the moment you started to judge it. Or you can look and you can see it in the way I'm trying to help you see for the moment, which is, wow, I knew. I did know. Okay, I didn't listen to it. That's it. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. But I knew. I wasn't bereft of wisdom. I wasn't stupid. I wasn't some dunce that just got duped and fell into this. In fact, it's not true that I got duped, because I knew. I didn't know what to do with my knowledge. Maybe I was too, you know, young, too immature, too whatever. But the fact that you can look back and go, you know, I knew. There's something empowering about just that. If you cannot judge it for a second, you can realize that you actually did know. There was some power of discrimination, intuitive, just that sense that something's not quite right. It was probably, it may have been vague, you know, because often our intuitions like that can be vague. But first of all, to allow yourself to see that I knew. And then you start to allow yourself to see. And at each point along the way, I made decisions to ignore what was true for me. Somebody was manipulating somebody. Who knows what they were doing? But on your side, when you see, I made decisions each point along the way to not listen to myself. I did that. Why do we do that? For the most part, because we just don't have enough life experience to know that that's not a good idea. Right? It's innocent. Like, you didn't sit there and go, well, I feel like I'm being manipulated here, and this is going to end in a hellish nightmare. But you know what? I'm just going to do it anyway. You know, you don't know that part, right? If you did, you just wouldn't do it.
No, I mean, in fact, I went the whole other direction. I was like, I don't want any spiritual teacher after this. I rejected all spiritual teachers. I can't even consider you my teacher because of it.
Yeah, neither do you need to. Because I'm not, you know, the thing, what you don't need, it's not so much that you need to rediscover your trust in an external authority. It's you need to rediscover your trust in your own. Because that's what you betrayed. And I don't mean to say that as a judgment. I've done the same darn thing. Everybody in this room, I would put money on, has betrayed their own deeper wisdom at some point in their life. Sometimes it's had a big cost. Sometimes the cost has been relatively minor, but everybody's done it. And for the most part, we certainly don't know the end outcome it's going to have, right? Forgive them for they know not what they do. Try to turn it around and turn it to yourself every once in a while. Forgive me for I know not what I do. I did not know what I was doing. But the first thing, see, the thing that's going to free you is when you see, I did know, and I knew at each step, and I'm the one that gave my power away. I didn't have enough knowledge, I didn't have enough experience, I was young, whatever, but I did it. It's really important to see that, because until you can see that, all you'll be left with is somebody did something to me. And then you know, it's hard to let go of that someone. It's very hard to let go. And more importantly than that, it's really almost impossible then to really fully trust yourself. But when you can see, I knew, wow. You know, I won't go into the details, but I had a really tough situation at one point in my life, many years ago. Really, probably the toughest time of my life. And I, at some point, I thought, how in the hell did I get myself in this? This is the most god-awful, terrible nightmare I could imagine. You know, I wouldn't wish this on Adolf Hitler. You know? And as one day, I just thought, how in the hell am I going to get out of this? How am I going to do this? I just couldn't imagine. It was so complex, so intermingled, so weird and twisted, I thought, I have no idea how I'm going to get into it. The thing that I had, the first thing I realized out of the blue, grace again, was actually, I knew the truth all along. I didn't listen to it. I didn't listen to it. It might have been a small truth, eeny, teeny, teeny, among my great desires, but it was there and I didn't listen to it. And how am I going to get my, how am I going to extricate, thank you. How am I going to extricate myself from this situation? And I realize I'm going to extricate myself in exactly the opposite way that I got into it. I got into it by not telling the truth to myself or to others. Not that I was intentionally lying or anything, and I'm going to get out by telling the truth to myself and others. That's how I'm going to do it. I don't know how the truth's going to get me out, but that's what I'm going to do. And I'll be damned if it didn't get me out. And pretty quick. And so was it humbling? Oh, my God. Was it humiliating? Oh, you bet. Did it lower my, the way the people at that time knew me and how they held me? You bet. Their idea of me was ripped, torn, shattered, put on the ground, and stamped. And at some point, when I stopped being horrified, I realized, actually, I kind of like it. I don't have to be that person anymore. But you get where I'm coming from?
I do. I mean, what I need to kind of discern is the difference between personal responsibility and kind of just burning in that. Mm-hmm. And there's something empowering about that.
Yes, very.
And something completely powerless at the same time.
Yes.
And shame.
Yes. Yeah.
And then, because the shame brings me back and a victim.
I know. Yeah, of course it does. So, look, shame, and these are delicate things I'm saying here, so just hope you bear with me so you see what I'm really talking about. Shame is arrogance turned upside down. That's what it is. It's like a coin. On one side, shame. On the other side, arrogance. Why? Because shame is usually based on some sort of notion, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I got involved in that. Some sort of shame, right? Some sort of diminishing of yourself, right? Well, you feel shame to the extent that it destroys your idea of yourself. Arrogance. If you didn't have an idea of yourself that you were really sorry you lost, there wouldn't be shame. There would be just, God, look what I did. I didn't listen to myself. I didn't act on it. I got involved with something that really didn't seem to serve me particularly well. Yeah, that's what I did. I'll be damned.
And that's humility.
That's humility. That's right. Humility is when you're not you. This is. I'll just bring it back to something personal, not because I want to talk about myself, but because I think sometimes these things can be abstract, and so I'm trying to bridge that abstraction gap. In this situation, I also had a certain sense of feeling ashamed. And then one day, again, out of the blue, literally, no credit on my own, I heard there was like a voice that came in my head, and it said, "Who the hell are you to feel ashamed? How arrogant of you to feel ashamed. Did you think you were better than this? Why did you think you were better than this?" It said. And that was it. That's what it said. That was the voice of God to me. I don't know how God talks to you, but that's how God talked to me at that time. You know, and in the way I needed to be talked to hear, to see, like, yeah. And I realized, yeah, I didn't see myself as this kind of person. I didn't. And my life experience showed me, and at least at that time, you were. And it's the resistance to seeing that, right? It's the resistance, like, I don't want to see myself that way. That's the shame, that the resistance of the breaking down of how you see yourself. When there's no resistance, then it's like, yeah. Apparently, I'm somebody that could have gotten involved in that. At least at that time. I didn't think I was. I don't like to think that I was, but I was. Do you see? And if there's no resistance, you can actually, it's almost like you can feel it, like you can take a breath, like you can breathe it in, like, yes. I can breathe it. It won't kill me to breathe it in. It won't shatter me. It won't disempower me. Actually, just the opposite. That's humility, right? Humility does not mean being ashamed. That's not humility. That's upside down arrogance. Humility is, I'm willing to see whatever there is to see, even if it was about something long ago. I'm willing to be that nobody. And that, it's not discounting anything that this other teacher did I'm not saying they didn't have their own responsibility. They had their own responsibility, of course. They did what they did. It had the effects. It's not, you see, it's not an excusing of anybody else's actions or behavior. But what locks us into time and space is when we get so focused on somebody else that we've stopped taking care of our own business. You know? Because it's always a dance. It's always a dance. You know, it's like when that magazine salesman came to my house 10 years ago and sold me a magazine and wanted to sell me a magazine. And I looked at them and I knew I'm never going to see this damn magazine. I just knew it.
I always buy them.
I'd had it happen.
Still.
You don't get it, right? And I even asked for two magazines that they didn't even have on the list. Oh, I can get those. And I knew it, but somehow I just couldn't keep myself from writing the damn check and giving it over. And of course, I never got my magazines. Do you know what I mean? Am I upset with him? No. Why? I knew. I was complicit in my own ripoff. All right.
Thank you.
I hope you feel what I'm talking about, because
oh yeah, I
hope
feel
it's
it.
Good. Okay, because I know it could be taken in a not good way. I mean, one could judge themselves, but when you really get it, it's so liberating. Come on, it's so freeing. It really is. I think a lot of situations in life seem to be just put together, just perfectly. So whatever image you have of yourself and other people have of you, life's just put together just right. So to just smash it. For you and for everybody else, you know? Over and over and over. It just seems so beautifully adept at doing that. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have to say thank you in so many levels to you. First, thank you for writing your books. They've been extremely helpful.
Oh, good.
And we have to come up with a different verb, not reading your books. Because it's like the divine in you talking to the divine in us, and somehow they understand each other.
That's exactly what it is.
But it's not reading.
I know, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So thank you for that.
Well, whatever we call it, apparently you're doing it. Yeah. You're welcome.
Thank you for being that.
You're welcome. You know what? I've only actually written one book. The last two, maybe three, I went into a studio and just talked them out like this.
Really?
In 3 or 4 days, 3 or 5 days. Yeah. I just in a microphone instead of in a little studio. Oh, by the way.
That's great.
It actually gets made into a book.
The spirit talking to the spirit.
That's right, right. No. Exactly. It's what it is. So I'm glad it works for you.
Thank
really
you.
Am.
Works for many. I recommend it to all my friends, and they all love you.
We'll pay you out in the hall.
Good, right? Good. Thank you. I'll take products. Also, I wanted to thank you for the distinctions that you made today. With the awakening of the mind versus the awakening of the heart. Because I think also when the heart opens and awakens, it feels almost like when the mind, when you go beyond the mind, it awakens in a way that you don't really care that much about anything. It's that emptiness and at the same time everything, but everything is just perfect.
Yes.
So it's not much compassion there. Or it is, but it's different when the heart opens.
Yeah. If it's really, really open, then it's a compassion devoid of worry. Like, everything's okay.
Right.
Totally okay. And because I think often we have a sense of compassion or love connected with an idea of not okay.
Right.
Like, oh, I feel so sorry for you. I feel so bad for you. Or we can have this, a very open love and compassion without any sense that it's not okay.
Right.
Or there's been something shouldn't be happening. We can have this. The best way I've ever heard that describe a word that I love is, it's an old spiritual teacher. He's no longer with us, Franklin Merrill Wolf. And he called it the high indifference. Exactly. The high indifference.
The high indifference.
Because, you know, indifference is just like, oh, I just don't care. That's
right.
Indifferent. But he thought the high indifference was that sense of everything is perfectly okay. And there's a outflowing of love and compassion and well-being,
right.
You know?
And also, I made a distinction today when you were talking about that. That also when the heart opens in that sense towards others, because you were saying it's not quite the answer to humanity to only be awakened on one level.
Mm-mm.
But also when the heart opens towards others, when you start to see yourself in others so much that yourself kind of disappears,
yes.
Then that's probably closer to the solution to humanity.
I would imagine it's a whole heck of a lot closer than we've come up with so far.
Right.
Yes. Yes, because so much is based on that we, so many of us human beings, we don't see ourselves.
Right.
As each other.
The other.
Yeah.
Or as God, or the God in
God.
Us.
Yes.
In everybody.
Right.
Or in everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's love, too. To see that
too.
Is love, isn't it? Compassion.
Yes.
Open-heartedness. I mean...
What I wanted to ask you is, this place is very strange. Almost feel that as everything I say, it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because the second I say something, also the opposite is true, and I know it's true.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then why do we even talk? But I know you understand what I'm saying,
of
but also I don't know how in the world you can be so eloquent about talking about this.
Well, no matter how eloquent I may or may not be, never forget that it's still not totally true. It's still equally not true as it is true. But that's, I think that's the beauty, part of the beauty of language, and each of us discovering sort of our true language is
right.
The more, when we do see what we're talking about, not only see but really experience, that what we're saying is never the truth.
No.
There's no such thing as speaking the truth necessarily. But having said that, there is a way that we can speak that somehow carries the truth.
Right.
You know, the words become a carrier. They are not the end point, that they carry something. They almost like they carry the remembrance of the truth, that they carry the perfume of it. And it's not something that we have to sort of devise to do it. It almost comes from that realization that no words are the truth itself. As we know that,
Right. Then
strangely, our words start carrying more truth.
Hmm.
Because they have a different energy to them, because we, even as we speak them, we don't believe them literally.
Right.
And then that's, I think, what allows them to carry something else with them.
That's,
you know, when
beautiful.
We believe
yes.
in when we believe that
yes.
what I'm saying is the truth, it doesn't carry anything except the intellectual component.
Got it. It comes from through the mind, from the mind.
Yes.
What you're talking about comes from something that's from a different place.
Yeah, because really, in a certain sense, all of our speaking can aspire to poetry.
Yes.
Like, not that we have to sound poetic, but a poet knows that as they're writing their poem, these words are not what I'm trying to convey.
Right.
But if it's put together just right, it elicits what it's trying to convey anyway. It elicits some things that are beyond the words. And to me, this is really what true communication is.
Got it. That was actually my question. I couldn't quite formulate it. Since I know that nothing I say is true, then how do I what's true communication? But I got it.
You get it?
I get it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also, we could even take it one step further. Is not only is nothing we say the truth, in the same way I like to always point out that the word water is not the same as this liquidy stuff that tastes good going down your throat when you're thirsty. The word water will never be wet, ever. That's what it means, that words aren't the thing. But also, not only does a word not convey the totality of the truth, that even a realization is not the totality of the truth. You just mentioned it really good. We often go from believing the words we say are what's true, right? This is what I'm saying is true. Then we have a realization, something lets go, and realize nothing I'm saying is true. Nothing I'm saying is true. And that has a truth too, but it's only true if you don't hold it too tight. When you don't hold on to that, because that if that realization is held on to exclusively, then you're left for the rest of your life going, feeling like you're lying every time you're opening your mouth or not telling the truth. But when you realize unity is these seeming opposites, words are true, my words are true, and my words aren't true, that they are actually like two sides of one truth. And they just dance. And they are true and they aren't true. And they're not true, but they can carry truth. Your words aren't true, but they can carry truth. My words aren't true, but they can carry truth. So both of those so the point I was trying to make, that even our realizations, we often go from realizing this to then realizing its opposite. I do exist as a human being, that we have an awakening, and it's, I don't exist at all, it feels like. I don't exist. As I've said many times, when you told my teacher you don't exist, you get a crack on the head with the staff, and then said, okay, Mr. I don't exist, who has a sore head, as a way to like, okay, it's not that I don't exist, that realization, it's not that it isn't true. It's just that it's not exclusively true. Because also you do exist and you don't exist. And to the mind, our mind can't put these together, can it? It's like trying to take something that's straight and brittle and bend it around like this in a circle without breaking it. But you can't do that. In experience, however, it's clear as day in the depth of experience. I don't exist, as strange as it sounds to the mind. And simultaneously, I do exist. And I exist as the totality of all, everything. And simultaneously, I exist as this one particular being. Which one is it? Check your experience. Both. Simple. So even in the realm of often our moments of insight are often moments of crystallized, beautiful truth being shown to us. But very often those crystalline truths is just, we're being shown the side of something that we hadn't seen. We're being seeing the other side of the truth. Later, then, we'll have to let go of both, not throw them out, but let go, and then we start to see that. Because a lot of what passes for non-duality these days is actually not non-duality at all. It's radical duality. It's, I don't exist, period, end of story. But that's just as dualistic as I am me and ego. It's just the opposite side of it. And the thing is, both of them have their truth. Until you divorce, you split the whole apart. Then it's split, isn't it? So when it comes together, then that's the beauty of it, isn't it? It's the beauty of life. It's to the mind, it's so seemingly contradictory and perplexing, And yet in our own direct experience, in the depth of it, we contain these extraordinary paradoxes with absolute ease, especially when our mind is no longer trying to grab them, you know. Oh, good, we got another 20 minutes or so. Come on up. Y'all enjoying yourself? I hope so. Okay.
I see why so many people today have said I'm nervous, because even the thought of speaking made me start shaking. The last time I saw you in San Rafael, someone came up to me afterwards and said, "You have to ask a question. There's something that happens when you ask a question." So I'm daring to do it. Fierce Grace is such a powerful topic for me. As a child, I had a brutal childhood. I had a brutal father that used to hit me and knock me all the way across the room. He was, I was in a state of terror as a child.
Of course.
And I think, then I went into my 20s and had no sense of any sense of value. The kind of the pervading message throughout my childhood was, you are nobody, you don't matter, you, nothing you do or say is important. And I really laughed during your running away from home things, because I ran away from home so many times and got down to the end of the block and did the same thing, like, where would I go? Back in those days, there was no child protective services.
Yes.
And so anyway, I went into my 20s and did really intensive therapy for 9 years with different therapists, and built a sense of myself, that my value, my that I matter. And then I started doing doing a Zen practice, an intensive Zen practice, and heard the message of letting go of self. It took me so long to build this self,
I know,
and now I'm letting go of the self.
You just got it kind of healthy and coherent and feeling good about itself, and now it's like 9 years. It's,
Yeah, 9 years.
But remember, it's not so much letting go in the sense of getting rid of. It's letting go in the sense of not clinging to. Not looking even at your good self, you know, your better self that you were able to come upon in therapy, which in the world of self, it's, of course, highly advantaged. It's much more to an advantage, to an enjoyable life, to have a healthy, relatively integrated, good sense of yourself, right? It's a healthy thing in the world of self than to have a fractured sense of you're worthless as a self, you know, or as a human being. That's no way to go through life, really. So, but you get there, and then if you come upon a teaching that's in some way looking into the deep nature of self, of what we really are, and you can hear a teaching that might say, oh, that self, whether it's good or bad, it's not really what you are. That doesn't mean like you just, you know, crinkle up like a piece of paper, throw it over your shoulder. You know, it's what it really is just seeing that that self doesn't tell me really. It can't contain what you really are. What you really are is much vaster than that, even the best self. Much more beautiful than the best self. Has inherently much more kind of inherent meaning than even the best self, you know? So it's just seeing that our idea of ourself, even if it's good. And it's better to start out with a good idea if you have one, or if you've found one, that's great, because it's easier to let go of. It's harder. It can be done, of course, but it's harder to let go of a really fractured sense of self, because the fracturing wants to be made whole, doesn't it? The fractured self wants to be made whole. It wants to be made worthy. It wants to be made valuable. It wants to feel worthy of love and appreciation and all the rest. One can let go of it, but it's much easier to let go of exclusively identifying with a healthier sense of self. It's easier. Even though it's beautiful and, you know, long time has been spent on it, and those years are not wasted years at all. You know, that is the shell, that's the exterior through which you will function. You know?
Well, thank you.
Was there a question, though? I don't know.
A question that I'm struggling with right now in my life is I tended when I was younger to, it was, be in a one up, one down position with friends that I had learned that with my father, that I would sit in their court and praise them, and I would have the favor of their friendship. Highly narcissistic people. It was so familiar to me. That's what I was raised with.
Right.
Now I have these friends that are kind of what you were talking about earlier today, of, you know, that we have this need for being heard and being confirmed, and you have two people doing that, and neither of them are hearing each other. And
yeah.
And I have friends that I feel that aren't healthy for me.
Yes.
Because they're so highly narcissistic. And it's sad to me.
Yes.
I feel these are, you know, my longest lasting friends that I feel is healthy for me to choose to not be friends with anymore.
Yes.
Yes. I just wanted to know what you would say about that.
I would say you're right. Or what I would really say is you are allowed to make that choice, and that choice at times in our lives is an important and wise choice to make. Because there are people that are not inherently healthy to be around. That does not mean that we have to condemn them or see them belittled. If anything, if we see them from our truer eyes, we see it with compassion, because we know what's happening in them. We understand it. You know, we don't just brush them off, you know, in the sense of, oh, they're narcissistic and no longer of use to me or serving me. But we see that, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They're caught, you know, and there's an innocence underneath it. It can be destructive on the exterior, but on the interior, they're caught. And you know what it's like to be caught. Mm. And most everyone in this room knows what it's like to be caught. And so it's not out of judgment, but even though you're not judging, that doesn't mean that you divorce yourself from your wisdom. And wisdom sometimes can say, this person is no longer really healthy to be around. They're just not healthy for me to be around. That doesn't mean you have to push them out of your heart. You may not have them a part of your life, but it's different to say, I really can't be with you. You know, this doesn't seem healthy to me. That's, you can do that. But to push them out of our heart is something different. That is to lose the compassion. Mm-hmm. We can set our boundaries and still have the compassion. Mm-hmm. In fact, the boundaries are sometimes, they are an expression of the compassion. They're an expression sometimes of love. Mm-hmm. In other words, there are times when to say no is actually to say yes. Sometimes when you say no, you have to say no to affirm something that's very true inside of you. Right? So in essence, mm-hmm. you're saying yes to something that's really, really true, but the way it's going to come out is you have to say no to somebody. So when your no feels like a yes, right, that it's, you're being true to something inside of yourself, right, like it's just not serving me to be with a narcissistic person who's always in need and want and grasping and, you know, conflict. It no longer serves me. That's this, and you see that. That's to say yes to something. You're saying yes to you that you see that. You're saying yes to it doesn't serve me. And then your follow through may be saying no. That's not a friendship that I want to maintain. That happens, right? That's part of wisdom. Part of wisdom. It's part of love. It's just like, you know, when sometimes if you're a parent, you have to say no to your child. It doesn't mean you don't like your child. It doesn't mean you stopped loving your child, right? It just means sometimes you have to say no, you know? No, sweetheart, you can't pull the entire stand of candy bars down in the middle of the store. You can't do that. I'm sorry. No, you know, that doesn't mean you're saying no to their being, does it? Yeah. So sometimes that's the case, yeah. And sometimes it is sad, you know? Sometimes it is, because sometimes some of these relationships can be old, long relationships, you know? But as you change, as you evolve, sometimes relationships will evolve with you. Sometimes it won't matter if they evolve, because at the base, at the core, there's something that's inherently healthy. The more aware you become, the more spiritually aware you become, the more awake you become, those relationships that are deeply embedded in unconsciousness and will not or cannot move out of unconsciousness, those relationships often do not survive. Not because that person, you're necessarily judging them, you're just realizing that you are in now a way of seeing life that they are no longer in. And you guys, you're like this. You're not meeting each other. You're missing each other. Mm-hmm. You know? Other friendships, you know, someone could care less about spirituality or any human potential or any of that kind of stuff. But underneath, there's just something whole about it, right? There's just something good about it. Those will survive. Those will survive fine. And then other relationships will kind of evolve with you. But that is part of what happens for most people. You do sort of evolve out of certain relationships. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yes, right in the end. Come on up.
Hi.
Hi.
So, fierce grace... for me, a few months ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And once I got over the initial shock of it, because it wasn't in my plan, nor was it my self-image, I had imagined myself very healthy. Mm-hmm. Once I moved through that, I immediately woke up to so much. And it was this profound experience of grace. Mm-hmm. And people would come up to me in my life and say, wow, you're such a teacher to me and moving through this so gracefully. And I didn't feel like I was doing anything. It just was.
Yeah. But they noticed something changing in you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful, actually. And people would say, oh, I'm so sorry you're going through this. And I didn't feel sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. It wasn't what I would choose, but I felt grateful in a way.
Yeah.
And so then that started to fade as I faced having to make a decision and making a decision to have surgery. And I fell out of that grace and spent quite a while trying to grasp at it and find it again and not accepting that I wasn't feeling that and frustrated. And then I did have surgery and then found out that... it's this unusual kind of cancer that isn't life-threatening, and they said they got it all, but it was invisible to the modern technology, so they're recommending more surgery, and that I actually have my breast removed. Mm-hmm. And so I'm faced with having to make another decision, a big decision, a big life decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's challenging.
Yeah.
And I have recently felt a lot of fear come up around either choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being with the fear and allowing the fear. And yet, in the, I feel like the fear is clouding my ability to hear my innate wisdom around what I should do. And I know that the fear can inform me and help guide me, and there's probably wisdom in it. But how, so my question is how to embrace and hold fear and also hear my innate wisdom, which I know is there, but it's clouding.
Okay. So fear is there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what happens when, just in this moment, when you just acknowledge, okay, fear is here. Fear is here. Fear is here. The not knowing, not knowing mm-hmm. exactly what to do is here. It's all here.
Mm-hmm.
You're waiting. I can hear it in your voice. You know what I mean, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I can hear.
I'm waiting for something to happen.
I know. That's
you know,
what
for
I can
the
hear.
Innate wisdom
I can hear
to
it.
Drop in.
In the uh-huh. It was like, uh-huh, when we're waiting for something to happen.
Like, what now?
Yeah, I know. I know. So I'm just pointing it out. Mm-hmm. It's, we do that. That's a human thing. So fear is here. So if we can just see the tendency to go into future with fear, how do I deal with it? What do I do about it? How do I have clarity in the midst of it? All of that, right? Underneath that approach is future.
Right.
Right? So just for the moment, what we're going to explore, we're not going to try to produce anything. We're exploring. What if we just, for the moment, we let go of future? So we feel, first of all, you allow yourself to feel no future, no tomorrow, just here. No expectation of what's going to come out of being here. It may be there, but you see it, you just put it aside, you can get back to it. Hope that you'll get clarity, just put it aside. Mm-hmm. Then you can be here. And there may be fear here.
Well, I don't feel fear when I let that go, when I let the future go. It's all based on a future percentage that
right. okay.
I might have, this might reoccur,
right.
and it might reoccur as
right.
a danger to my body and fear of death, really.
Of course.
So when I let go of future,
okay.
or losing a body part, there's
yes.
fear about that.
Yes, right.
When I let go of future, there isn't fear.
Okay, so there's not fear. So now you still have the decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you're just feeling into the, you're feeling in, you're letting your, you're feeling into your being. Now you're not looking for the right decision. We got to put that aside too. Because that's not how our system does not work in terms of right or wrong, really. Our deeper wisdom. That's not how it moves, and mm-hmm. we're always looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this what I should do?
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't do? Is this what I'm supposed to do? Is this the right thing to do? And the reason we don't get answers, because we're asking the wrong questions. We just don't know we're asking the wrong questions. We're asking something that doesn't speak that language. Should, shouldn't, right, wrong. So I'm just informing you. So now you have the information. That, oh, to try to address my deeper wisdom with that kind of question, the reason I don't get any response is because I'm just asking it the wrong question. Mm. The questions don't make any sense to it. They make sense to my mind, but not to that. So those get put aside. So now you're just with yourself, you see. And then you're just feeling. You're not asking for explanations or justifications. You're just feeling, what's the way in which what's whole in me is moving? It's not explaining. It's not giving guarantees. Just where is that deeper wisdom? It's almost like, how is it inclined? Which way is it going, you see? And don't ask it to explain itself, because it doesn't understand that language. Hmm. It won't explain itself. And then you can begin from that sort of, there's a calmness then, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of start to feel a little more. It's kind of a combination of feeling, intuition, and sort of a wisdom, a very sort of precise wisdom that can then start to come together. And the thing is, when the deeper wisdom in you talks or informs you, it never gives a guarantee. It never says, sweetheart, this is the way to go and everything will be fine. It's just like this. How about this way? How about this way? And you say, is that the right way? It never talks back to you. You ever noticed? If it's your ego will go into, well, let me do the calculations.
I figure it out.
Right. And I'm not saying you divorce yourself from information, you know, that your doctors give you. It's not that you're, you've already taken that in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not, it's not like this intuitive knowing or the more analytical approach. No, you've taken it into your system. You're not trying to be silly or not pay attention to mm-hmm. that. You are, but you've taken it into your system and you're letting, again, this whole wisdom, heart wisdom, show you the way. And it's already taken in that information. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's not one or the other. You're just going from something that's whole.
Yeah, my mind gets in the way.
I know.
All the statistics and
yeah.
What if this, what if that.
I know. But you have the answer to all those, the mind's fears, which is, I don't know what's going to happen. The statistics are this way. Statistics, don't know. What should I do? I got to figure out the right way. Can't. It's not going to work that way. Just, it's not going to work that way. I mean, you already know that,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could convince yourself, this is the right way. And at the end of the day, but you don't really
know.
There
is no right way.
There's just the way.
Yeah, the way I choose.
There's just the way. Mm-hmm. There's just the way you go.
Hmm.
So the ways that we package these supposed decisions, we package them in the sense I have to have certainty, mm-hmm. and I have to know what's, you know, I have to have guarantees, I have to be convinced. All of these are, they're familiar, but it's just the reason that it disconnects you from your deeper wisdom is because your deeper wisdom doesn't speak that language. Mm-hmm. It's not how it moves. That's just not how it moves. It's almost like playing ball. Like if I had a ball and I tossed it to you, your tendency would be to reach up and grab the ball. You wouldn't have to think about it. You wouldn't think about the percentages of whether you grasp it or not, you know, whether it fumbled out of your hand. You just tend to hold it, right? That's wise.
Like when you were given the example of when a truck is coming to hit you, you just jump out of the way. So fear informs us to react that way.
Mm-hmm. But imagine that it all had to go through your mind and convince you that it was a good idea to move away from the truck. I mean, before you could get like half a sentence of that thought process out, you'd be perfectly splattered all over the pavement. You know? So I have a sensitivity for what you're experiencing, you know, and I understand this decision is a big decision, you know? But I'm just trying to help you see, if you start to speak the language that talks to the wisdom of the heart, then you're much more likely to get a response. When we speak the language of the mind of fear and hesitation and doubt, and that's what's asking the question, that's, we don't get a response because the wholeness of the heart doesn't, that fractured way of asking the question doesn't make any sense to it. You know, it'd be like going and asking someone in Russia what you should do. They may give you the answer. You know, you'd ask them, but they wouldn't even understand the question.
Mm-hmm.
What's she talking about? You know, when you ask God for certainty, God's like, don't even understand what you mean. Certainty? have you not opened your eyes yet? But then there is a wisdom, right? There's a knowing that can come out of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Ooh, okay. In fact, a lot of what we do here is coming to be able to access that truth in you, whether it's ultimate truths about the truth of your being, the truth of existence, the truth of God, right down to, I have this important decision to make about my body, what should I do? All these, this, and everything in between, there's this deeper wisdom, there's this deeper love that we can, that can come forward, can flower in terms of awakening, or can flower in terms of just an inclination towards some way to move. But it really, what it really takes is a sort of a listening and a suspension of that sort of anxious mind, you know, just to suspend it for a moment, or promise that you'll get back to it. Just put it over to the side and then see what's left. You'll often be surprised what's left when you, that you literally just put it aside, get back to it, and then you can access. And if none of that works, it's all okay, because you can't screw it up, because you aren't doing it anyway. You don't have the power to go against all forces in the universe. Why? Because you are entirely comprised of all forces in the universe. See, so you can't separate it out. Knowing that, not as a belief, but as a knowing deep in your being, that you actually can't screw it up, that really just takes the anxiety level right down. Like, oh, I don't have the power to screw it up. It may look like a screw up, but I think we've already seen that sometimes the screw ups end up to be the best things that ever happened. So it's hard to judge, isn't it? It's really impossible to judge. Nice to be with you all today. See you tomorrow. Namaste. Yeah.